Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Answers from the Lab, where we share Mayo Clinic knowledge and advancements on the state of testing and science from laboratory leaders and the people who are making it happen behind the scenes. I'm Dr. Bobby Pritt, Chair of the Division of Clinical Microbiology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And with me today is Dr. Bill Maurice, the President and CEO of Mayo Clinic Laboratories. Hi, Bill. Welcome back.
Yeah, as always, good to be here.
Yeah, another week, another great time to talk about what's going on in our specialty. And you just got back from Washington, D.C., the ACLA annual meeting. I bet you have some hot updates for us.
Yeah, well, I have updates for sure. I guess hot's a matter of perspective, but there's certainly a lot going on. I was out there actually almost for the full week in Washington, D.C. It was beautiful weather. It was like in the 70s, and that's like one of my favorite cities. It's a great city to go for a walk or a jog. You know, we go out on the mall, and it was great. I did a few things out there. Actually, my first thing, I got a chance to visit our Representative Emmers from Minnesota, who's actually the majority whip in the House. So I got to visit the Capitol building for the first time, which was really cool.
Excellent.
And talk to and be in the majority whip's office for the House. A few things that were really interesting about that. Number one, they have a clock running about showing the next when they have to have the next deal done to continue funding for the government, you know, and discretionary funding or whatever that it's at. And there's only was 9 days on that clock. And so that was one of the points that was made to us by Representative Emmer's office, is just that they're still embroiled in the work, really what should have been 2023 in terms of 2024 budgetary stuff, which is a bit disconcerting because that means that it makes it more and more difficult to focus on new legislation, right? Although there's a lot of interest in healthcare in President Biden's plan. There was a lot of healthcare stuff. There's a lot of interest in Congress in getting legislation passed around healthcare, which is good for us. And still a lot of support around SALSA. But that was the first thing to note, was just how much Congress has going on right now. So that was, I think, one thing for all of us. Again, it was reiterated around SALSA and getting an alternative to PAMA beyond just delaying PAMA cuts. It's going to really take a good advocacy. Everyone you talk to on bipartisan, so on both sides, really is supportive of doing something more that would be more, make the labs kind of give us some security going forward and what that's going to look like, not the uncertainty of our PAMA cuts going to come, how big they would be. But, you know, there's so many competing priorities in Congress, and especially something that has to get paid for in some way, shape, or form, that really the advocacy groups, there's top lab cuts that on the ACLA side. I'm sure other professional societies have stuff just for people to stay engaged on that, as you and I have talked about in the past.
Yeah, you know, along those lines, Bill, I'll just mention, of course, I'm heavily involved with the College of American Pathology, CAP. They are also very active in this space. And in fact, there's a CAP Pathologist Leadership Summit coming up in April 13th to the 16th. And that's an opportunity for pathologists to go and meet their representatives and advocate on these same issues. So I'll put a plug in for that. I'll be there. And it's fun to go to the White House and actually be on the campus and then go in and meet with your representatives and their assistants and really talk about the issues that are important to us.
Yeah.
And that's something that anyone can do. It's open, coming up soon.
That's great. I will say, there just makes a difference when you're there in person. I did a lot of Zoom meetings for advocacy with the federal government during COVID. It doesn't have the same impact. A lot of times, because you have to work with the staff for our congressional representatives. And so for them to really understand it, have a little more time with you, just be able to ask questions. There are some really smart people that are supporting our representatives that want to understand the issues. So yeah, I that's great. I think people going in person really going to help. The other thing that, so in terms of other topics of interest while we were there, there's a few, even on the payment side, beyond SALSA, which is, and PAMA, which of course we've talked about a lot. I got a chance to meet with John Blum as part of the ACLA, American Clinical Laboratory Association board, the chief operating officer for CMS. So like one of the highest ranking people at CMS. They are very interested and are actually issuing policy around prior authorization and trying to make it simpler or to remove it altogether for certain things. And I mean, that can be a real problem for us in the lab, right? Particularly around genetic testing and other things where prior authorization, it puts us in the uncomfortable position of having a specimen and either running that test and not knowing if we're going to be able to actually get paid for the test or we're going to be giving the patient a bill, versus waiting and trying to sort through prior auth, because a lot of times what they need or want or request is not information we have access to. They want it directly from the physician. They don't accept things that are on the test request document, all those sorts of things. He listened, and it was a chance to explain that the challenge with labs is that we always are different, right? So if you're ordering a radiologic procedure, the prior auth process is cumbersome, but at least it makes sense with the workflow because you have to leave that office and then go someplace else to get the diagnostic service that you're looking for or that the physician has ordered. You know, with a test, you're going to get drawn right there and it's going to go. And so we've got a chance to really explain the workflows and how it's really a barrier for patients to get access to the care that their physicians want them to have and that they need to receive. And they were very receptive. And that's another area. You and I have talked about this a lot, particularly during your time as serving as DLMP chair. I mean, you know, it's a big issue for labs. So that was really gratifying to hear that there might be traction there.
Yeah, that's such a huge issue. And it's something we really do need to partner with our colleagues that are ordering the test to make sure it's in the workflow seamlessly. It's important that our patients aren't stuck with a big bill, but at the same time, we need to be able to understand the process and make it easy to get prior authorization and hopefully get approval from the insurance companies.
Yep, exactly. And then last but not least, there's a whole discussion around coding, something we don't think about a lot. There's a lot of people that because it can be very detail-oriented work, but the reality is that either some of the payers like the MACs, the Medicare Administrative Contractors that actually, you know, do the billing for Medicare, don't recognize things like PLA codes, or there's variability, and so that's also being addressed. So there's a lot of really good things happening, I guess, is the bottom line on that, which is super important for us. It's hard enough to keep the lab sustainable, but we really need to be getting paid properly for the work that we do. That was really good to hear that there's interest in the federal government in actually working on that. The other thing, of course, was there was a lot of discussion around FDA, as you can imagine.
Yeah, sure, of course. And we're still waiting to hear for the final rule, but it's all in the works, moving along.
Yep, it's at OMB. Now it's completely embargoed, so no one knows what exactly is in it. In terms of reading the tea leaves, if you will, the fact that it got to the OMB so quickly suggests that they might not have made a whole lot of changes from the proposed rule to the final rule, but we won't know until we see. And I think as we talked about last time, now there's a window that they want to get the final rule published and part of the public record. And that's something I didn't understand until recently. It's a function in Congress saying that if agencies issue a new rule within 6 months of a new Congress, the new Congress can then actually unilaterally rescind those rules. I think it's a way of prevent agencies from putting a lot of stuff in place kind of in a lame duck. So the pressure's on for them to get that out. So we'll see. My gut is it's going to come out in April. It is possible at the last minute that someone within the White House might get cold feet because of some stakeholder groups, but everyone's really gearing up for that, though. It does feel when you're out there, and this is not really much more qualitative than quantitative, if you will, but it really feels like it's going to happen this time. It's something we've talked about for, at least 15 years, but it kind of fills you with a little bit of a knot in your stomach just because it really just feels like it's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's hard to prepare until we know what is exactly in the final rule.
Yep, exactly. So
there's things like grandfathering, any other potential clauses, and how it's going to be enacted. So we will keep everyone up to date as we hear more.
Yep. Now, I would say that there is a lot happening behind the scenes to try and get Congress interested in a legislative solution, and kind of holding FDA accountable to make sure that this is actually within their authority to do so, because, of course, FDA as an agency reports to Congress, and B, to think get momentum behind a lab-specific framework, which has to be passed by Congress for the FDA to implement. We know that's what the FDA is interested in. That is their preferred route. They have said that on the public record, but they're using device regulations because that's what they have. I think people should really keep their ear to the ground on that as well and get engaged with that effort if they have the opportunity. You know, in the past, I think many have been reticent, I know, because they feel like, well, if we get engaged, we're acknowledging to FDA that they have the authority to do this and we don't want to do that. Well, if FDA comes out with the final rule, they will have the authority, right? And now that will get challenged. But at the same point in time, I think it's going to be really important for people, even if you have mixed feelings about FDA overseeing labs or not mixed, pretty polarized. I think if there starts to be work on a legislative solution, it's going to be important to get it stay engaged if there is indeed a final rule that's out there.
Yep, absolutely.
Last but not least, everyone wants to forget about COVID, but those of us in testing, and that includes public health, PAPA is the Pandemic All Hazards and Preparedness Act, which was in place when COVID hit and enabled the government to do a lot of things that it did in terms of public-private partnerships, things like reaching out to Mayo Clinic laboratories, the direct testing, all that kind of stuff. The government was able to do that because this legislation was in place. That legislation expired and needs to be repassed. So right now we're kind of in limbo here, and it goes back to what's all the things that Congress is grappling with right now. Interestingly, though, the current CDC leadership is very interested in continuing to kind of build out those relationships. In fact, ACLA and CDC signed a memorandum of understanding, which is just basically a public statement saying that we do want to collaborate in terms of data sharing and making testing available and all those sorts of things following both COVID and MPOX. So I think that's another thing to keep watching here and important, because as we've talked about, just because we had one pandemic doesn't mean that there's not another one around the corner.
Oh, absolutely. And that's hot off the presses, right, Bell? MOU with CDC and ECLA. And I would agree completely. We've been talking about the fact that we're going to see new pathogens or re-emerging pathogens. It's predicted on a basis of every 3 to 5 years. We're going to keep seeing things at least coming up again. And that might be Ebola outbreaks from time to time, or something going on in Chicago right now, measles.
Yeah.
And so here we have a vaccine preventable disease. And yet if you have people that aren't using the vaccine, then it's a highly, highly contagious disease, arguably one of our most contagious diseases. And it has some serious consequences, and it can be fatal. People forget about that.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of discussion around that, about how do we get testing to contain diseases and also get better global surveillance. You know, he brought up there was an outbreak of Marburg, but we just don't have good baseline testing to know if something truly an outbreak or not. You know, so there's a lot of the ways that we can work together. But yeah, measles is one that's got a lot of people's attention, including mine, because it's certainly on the rise, and it's been on the rise in Europe and now in the U.S. And to your point, it can be a fatal disease. It can have lifelong consequences, too, in terms of infertility and other things as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
Really,
we're going
to
be covering that in an upcoming podcast. So stay tuned on that one.
All right. Teaser alert.
Yeah.
So, excellent.
Well, thanks for all of those updates, Bill. Lots of things going on and lots of things in flight. So we will keep everyone updated on what final outcomes are as soon as we hear it.
We'll keep our ear to the proverbial ground.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us, Bill. And I'll look forward to our talk next week.
Yeah, I always look forward to it. And happy to do it.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Answers from the Lab. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, and don't forget to tune in every Thursday and every other Tuesday.